This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Oh, and what a weekend. I mean, the weather's in the 70s. The Mets are cleaning house. The Giants are winning football games. I mean, things are happening. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests on DCR appear via the Shep Pennzoil Performance Line. And then I found out last night we're on for an extra hour today. We stay on till noon. So, I mean, there's reason for excitement. Good morning. And maybe the news of the weekend, Chris. Quite possibly the thing that made me happiest all weekend, despite that Giants just throttling of Washington.
Oh, Brody Van Wagenen being shown the door.
No, I'll tell you what it was.
What
Buffalo
was it?
Plus three.
Hello!
It's over. Finally over.
It is over. RJ Bell and I streak of being winless and picking duds. It's finally over. We got a game right. How about that?
Congratulations.
Although so he got a game wrong with his own pick on our show when he took the Washington football team and laid the 2.5.
I thought he took the Jets under was his under the team.
No. I got it written down, Dave. He absolutely took the Washington football team and laid the 2.5. That was his own individual pick. And then our combined pick was Buffalo plus three.
Buffalo plus three.
And they routed the Seattle Seahawks. Routed them from the opening drive. It was lovely.
Josh Allen was nothing short of sensational. But with all the optimism and positivity, and the cherry on top, we have the Jets tonight, Rick. I mean, does it get better than this?
I wouldn't call that a cherry. I mean, let's be completely honest, especially because I got no Sam Darnold. But no, I mean, it was for you. I'm sure you're all fired up. I mean, Daniel Jones finally didn't turn the football over. He owns the Washington football team. I don't know about you guys, but watching Alex Smith, I can't remember a sporting event outside of my own teams that I have more anxiety watching than watching Alex Smith play football.
Like every time someone goes near him, you
every
get
single
nervous.
Time, yeah, every yeah. single time. It's an unbelievable story, but I will say this too: if you're Dwayne Haskins, be happy you're not playing quarterback for the Washington football team in November, because crazy stuff happens. Because
yeah.
It was Theismann in November. It was actually the same on the same date, Alex Smith, and then you had Kyle Allen yesterday.
Yeah.
That's craziness.
Now, those were in the middle of November. This one was early November.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy, though. It's all bad. But, I mean, at this point, Washington might as well let Dwayne Haskins play. Like, what are we doing?
I don't think they're going to.
If you're going to be out there losing football games, if you're going to have a quarterback that turns the ball over twice in the last 5 minutes of the game when you're down by 3 points, you might as well just play Dwayne Haskins. He couldn't be any worse than Alex Smith was down the stretch. Couldn't possibly be worse.
Yeah,
but that's neither here nor there. The story of the day should be the Giants' defense and their ability to get 5 takeaways. Giants were plus 4 in the turnover battle yesterday. You had 3 takeaways in the first half, and your offense got 10 points off of those takeaways, which really set the tone for the game. I mean, I felt the way about them going for it on 4th and short, Dave, on the opening drive, but then the fact that they were able to get the ball right back by Blake Martinez with a hustle play, punching the ball out of Antonio Gibson's hands on that check down, to me, that's a huge play. I mean, being able to swing the momentum back in your team's favor. And Patrick Graham has got this defense flying around, man. The amount of ball disruption that happens on the defense and the specials for the Giants, that's really been the story of their season in terms of what's keeping them competitive. Now it's just a matter of the offense coming around. And to their credit, Dave, the offense wasn't an albatross yesterday.
No,
the offensive the offensive line was solid. You had 100 yards rushing by halftime. And you know, for the most part, you did a decent job of protecting Daniel Jones. I think, again, it had more to do with scheme than anything else. But they did a solid job protecting it. And Daniel Jones didn't turn the ball over, even though he had opportunities to and came really close on a couple of occasions.
Now, here's my take on the game. And I think it's fair. And, Rick, I think you'll agree with this. And that is, they won. But, I mean, it's even when they win football games, at the end of it, you're like, that was awful. I mean, it's a win, and you go to 2-7, and Jones didn't turn the football over, and you win the turnover battle, and you ran the ball, and the offensive line looked better. And I'm not saying there's no positives, but, I mean, that should have never come down to that. Washington stinks. They're on their third-string quarterback. You're up by 17 points, and I have to turn them over late stages to get the win there? So, yeah, it's a win, but I'll be honest with you guys. Do I feel great about this? Not really. I don't. I don't
no,
feel
but you
great
should.
About any of this.
No, but you should, because, and I know it's early, but with what Joe Judge has done with this team, how competitive they are outside of that one game against.
I like Joe Judge.
No, and then on top of what he did with Golden Tate, I mean, he continues to impress me, so I like that. And I also like the fact that when you look at these two teams, I think there were different expectations for the Washington football team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They felt like they were where they needed to be to compete in this division on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
What we saw from the Giants defense last year, they were terrible. So they've made huge improvements.
Yes,
but
they
that's
have.
Exactly Daniel Jones in year two. That's what the game is supposed to look like. Your defense plays really well. You're able to run the football. He makes a couple really nice throws. And more importantly, he doesn't turn the football over, which actually gives you a chance to win that football game. That's how it's supposed to look.
Yeah, to me, yesterday, Daniel Jones played point guard. Like, he wasn't trying to be the star of the game. He was just trying not to be the reason why the Giants lost. And like you said, Rick, you sprinkle in a few throws right there, the throw that he had right at the two-minute warning before halftime where he throws the touchdown to Evan Engram. That's a great pitch and catch. Evan Engram finally making a play for his quarterback. But the most impressive part of that play was Daniel Jones' recognition that he had Evan Engram in one-on-one coverage.
Yep.
Like, recognizing it, seeing that he's matched up against Cameron Curl, who's replacing Landon Collins, and saying, you know what? This is a chance where I've got a favorable matchup. I got to give my guy a chance to make a play. And he put the ball in a place where either his receiver was going to get it or nobody else.
Yeah, Engram is maddening. He is maddening.
Well, yeah, he almost really was the reason why you had the turnover, almost had an interception, right? That one by Kevin Pierre-Lewis
that
where
one,
he lets
and then
the ball
one later
hit the
in the game. And I don't know,
the killed
announcer
the drive.
Says,
that killed
and
the drive.
I almost like cut off an ear. The announcer goes, boy, you never see him drop a pass like that. I don't know if you guys picked up
no,
on that.
No, we do. We see him drop plenty of those.
And it's like you never – have you watched any Giants
I don't know what Vilma was
all?
Talking about. I don't know what Jonathan Vilma was talking about. He was out of his mind.
Yeah,
yeah,
like, well, this type of thing
every
never
single
happened.
Game.
But you see, like, all wrapped up into one game, you see the really good Evan Engram because the touchdown catch was a really nice catch. And then there's balls that hit him in the hands and he doesn't catch them. So within one game, it's the microcosm of Evan Engram.
Yeah, that was a big drop too. I mean, that would have been a first down. That kind of killed that drive. And you were struggling in the second half to score points. I mean, you only scored 3 points in the second half, which obviously has to improve. But, I mean, just watching that game, especially in the first half.
At least they're better than the Jets in the second half.
Oh, I mean, that looked like – I was just going to bring up that point. The Washington football team looked like the Jets in the first half of that game. They could do nothing.
Yep.
They couldn't catch a pass. I mean, penalties, you name it. And Canty, my only concern is this. I will say this. My only concern, and maybe it's just with the pandemic and no OTAs, no preseason and everything else, Andrew Thomas does concern me a little bit.
He should. He should. And even though he didn't give up any sacks or pressures yesterday, he did have the holding penalty on Jonathan Allen late in the second half. But the one thing that Jason Garrett is doing, he's starting to use slide protections, full offensive line slides, and then putting backs and tight ends on the edge guys. So you're trying to hide Andrew Thomas when he's out there. But if you look at what they do with Matt Parrott at left tackle, they just leave him soloed up one-on-one.
Yep.
And he gets the job done. I mean, there was one time in the second half where he just manhandled Chase Young, and at the top of the pocket, he just dumps him on his head. Like, that's what you want to see from your left tackle. So, yeah, Andrew Thomas is a concern. But, again, I think they're going to let both of those young guys duke it out and compete to see who's going to be the left tackle of the future. But I will say that Andrew Thomas – is playing better now that there seems to be a little competition at that position.
Yeah, he has been better. And I think Lemieux is good, and Parrott looks pretty good, and Thomas has been better. I think there's reason for optimism. And they're running the ball. Like, on Monday night against Tampa, they ran the ball well. Yesterday, they ran the ball really well. Like, you can actually see this offense making strides. And, you know, for whatever reason, this is not a terrible defense from Washington. This should be a pretty good defense, and the Giants did move the ball on the ground yesterday. So you have to feel good about the offensive line in that aspect, guys.
No, the offensive line was good. Like I said, to have balance on the offensive side of the ball is going to be a good thing for Daniel Jones. The fact that you can turn around and hand it off to Gallman or Morris and those guys can get you 4 or 5 yards and your offense can stay on schedule, that takes pressure off of your young quarterback. So you hope that they can continue to make strides in that department. But that offensive line, they're not trained killers at the point of attack. It's more of position blocking and then Jason Garrett using scheme, using motion to challenge the eye discipline of the defense, a lot of split flow stuff, and doing that early on. You saw the reverse, I think it was the second play of the game to Sterling Shepard. So, I mean, this is a lot of smoke and mirrors from Jason Garrett, but to his credit, it's effective. And it's protecting a young offensive line that's learning on the job. And so the more snaps that they get under their belt and having the opportunity to play together, that group is only going to grow. They're only going to get better.
Canty, let me ask you a question. I mean, because you said it. I mean, it's clear that Pert right now is better at left tackle.
Yes.
Do you maybe decide to let Pert play left tackle and move Andrew Thomas over to right tackle?
I wouldn't have a problem with that, Rick, but when you start talking about decisions at that level, you know, general manager and ownership are going to get involved. And I know we want to believe it's a meritocracy, but Andrew Thomas is the fourth overall pick, and they got, what, $30 million invested in him? They're going to give him every opportunity to see if he can prove that he's the left tackle of the future. But, I mean, if he's not, you got a good option in Parrott, who seems like he's ready to go at that position. And as a backup or as a default, you can put Thomas at right tackle. Either way, it feels like you got your bookend tackles for years to come.
Which is nice. Thank God.
I just finally, Dave,
finally, after well, how many drafts?
Years. How many times has the offensive line been fixed? And finally, maybe it's hopefully fixed once and for all. Hopefully.
Yeah. Still got to answer the question of whether or not you got a quarterback.
Yeah, I still think that's a question.
Because it shouldn't be that dicey when Washington is on their third starter of the season in Alex Smith, who's coming back from a nearly career-ending injury.
No, it shouldn't be up 17 against Washington and need huge plays down the stretch to hang on to the victory. You should not.
No. You had a three-possession lead at halftime. It shouldn't come down to that. Your quarterback has got to do a better job of helping the offense to sustain drives in the second half. He has to. I mean, he's the sixth overall pick from 2 years ago.
But I want to give you a conversation. If they continue to compete the way they're competing, and, I mean, they're going to win some more football games. So, I mean, you won't have the opportunity to take a Justin Fields.
Maybe not.
You say they're going to win some more football games, Rico. I'm not as confident as you are.
I think they'll win a couple more because I don't see Jacksonville winning too many football games. The Jets may not win a game.
Did you see that game yesterday?
I did.
With Luton?
Yeah, but I think Houston's not very good. Houston ain't.
Yeah,
good.
I don't think Houston's very good, but I mean Jacksonville with a quarterback that nobody knew his name before this week went out there and came a 2-point conversion away from being able to push the Houston Texans. And they've got a quarterback that we would all agree is a top 10 player.
Yeah, so, I mean he is, but I mean that's not a top 10 well run organization.
No, it's not. No, it's not. You're right. They're a bad football team, but I guess I'm just saying it from this perspective. The Philadelphia Eagles is who's next on deck for the Giants. Then they got a bye week. Then they're on the road against Cincinnati. They're on the road against Seattle. They've got Arizona, who should be in the playoff hunt. Cleveland, who's in the playoff hunt. Baltimore Ravens, and then the Dallas Cowboys, who pushed the Steelers yesterday. So, I mean, that's the remaining schedule. I mean, I don't see a whole lot of wins in there.
Well, if you do well, you win two more.
Yes. But do I see games where I'm willing to check the box and say they're going to win that one? No, I don't.
No. If you're the Giants and you do well, you're going to win two more football games and have a 4-12 season.
Yeah.
That's probably about the best you can do.
Yeah, now, I think at that spot, you're still going to have a decision to make because there are going to be quarterbacks like Trey Lance, like the kid from BYU, that are going to be in the conversation for guys that are going to be taken in the top half of this year's first round.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading this weekend, there could be four quarterbacks taken in the top 12.
I'm not making that decision, though. If it's not Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, I'll ride with Daniel Jones for one more year. I will. And then hope there's a team that's looking to get one of these quarterbacks and I can trade down.
I got you. You're going for the generational talent. If that guy is not somebody that we've seen multiple seasons from, a larger sample size from, playing top tier quarterback play, like I get it. I get exactly what you're saying. Well, I mean, I'm just pointing that out. I'm just throwing that out there because that will be a conversation. That will be a decision that either Dave Gettleman or the next general manager of this team is going to have to make. Is Daniel Jones a guy that you feel like can have you consistently competitive year in, year out? Or is he a guy where you think, oh, you know what, we're always going to be looking to upgrade the position if he's our quarterback?
Right. Well, you know what Gettleman's going to say. I mean, if it's Gettleman, that's not even a debate. He's going to say he's our quarterback. We drafted him 6. I love him. He's getting better, and we're going to go to battle with him.
If you're Gettleman and you got 3 seasons under your belt with double-digit losses, I don't know how you make the case to keep your job.
He can't. He can't, really. I mean, if Dave Gettleman returns and is the decision-maker again for the Giants organization, something is really wrong with this team, with this organization. Really broken.
Yeah, but that'll depend. I mean, that feels like the way this thing is trending. I would just be interested to see what happens because you keep hearing a lot of people saying that it will be somebody tied to Joe Judge, Casario, or someone that, you know, with New England roots. Mm-hmm. But do you guys think that's the case? Do you think they'll take someone from within the Giants organization?
I think they like Judge enough that they would stray outside the organization.
I agree with that.
I think they love him.
Well, that's a step. I mean, that's positive then.
Very.
But as bad as some of the decisions that Dave Gettleman has made, and there's been some head scratchers. I mean, the DeAndre Baker, you name it. I mean, there's been some bad decisions. I think you also have to look at the fact that some of those decisions that he made early on were because he was told by ownership to make decisions like that, which, I mean, turned out to be really bad decisions. But some of the moves he made leading into this season have been good moves. They really have. Like, Jabril Peppers is balling, man.
He's a good player. And Leonard Williams has turned into a really good player.
Logan Ryan's been really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Blake Martinez has been really good.
Is always around the football.
Bradbury is a terrific corner.
And then just think how bad the defense was last season. It was like, I mean, it was awful.
I was fully expecting the defense to be top five worst defenses in the
National
Football League.
No, they're not. And they play hard.
No, they're not. I mean, you're talking about an above average to good unit. I mean, it's almost the inverse of what we thought. We thought the offense was going to have to carry the day, win the day for the Giants, and that the defense would be complimentary to that, and it's been the reverse. It's been the defense being able to keep games close and the offense doing just enough or not doing just enough to cause them to lose those close games. So you're just hoping the second half of this season that the Giants find themselves on the winning side of those close games.
Do we have to go through the same charade this week where it's, ooh, Philadelphia is 3-4-1 and we're 2-7 and a win over Philly puts us – is that the optic this week that we're doing?
I think it's only a conversation about the Giants being in the NFC East division race if they beat the Eagles going into the bye week. I think that's when it's fair to have that conversation. Until that happens, I don't want to hear about the Giants being a game and a half or two games back, whatever it is.
So we're not having that this is a big game on Sunday at 1 o'clock for the Giants?
Well, it's a big game.
Well, I think it's a big game. It's a big game because you're still trying to answer the question of whether or not Daniel Jones is your guy. But you know that you have a head coach. You know that you feel good about the way your defense is trending. I mean, the biggest question is, what is your quarterback going to be? And can he elevate the play of the guys that you have filling in around him?
Right, but that's irrelevant of the opponent this week. Like, you need to see him for seven games to see what he is, and the record is out the window with that. I'm saying, are we going to have the same song and dance one of these big games and the Giants can win the division if they beat Philadelphia on Sunday?
Well, it's a big game. It's a big game, period. I mean, I don't think I'm ready to start talking about the division unless they win this game. Because the division is so bad, I mean, I think to Canty's point, too, I think he's saying this is, I mean, this may be the most meaningful game Daniel Jones plays for the rest of the season.
Yes.
Like, it's that big. So you want to see, I mean, this is a great test for him. Because you can put yourself in that conversation now if all of a sudden you beat the Eagles because the division is so bad. You can.
At 3-7, we're right there for the division. I mean, it's kind of pathetic.
Well, it is pathetic, but, I mean, the Cowboys are bad. I mean, Washington, Daniel Jones owns Washington.
Oh, they
well, that's the thing, though, Rico. He owns Washington and nobody else in the division.
What is
and
he,
you
one
only
and
got two more opportunities to play against division opponents, including the one you got coming up this week. So at some point, you'd like to see him beat an NFC East team not named Washington. It has to happen.
Or just a team outside of Washington, period.
What are they, 1-16 against non-Washington teams?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the only one they beat was Tampa last year, right?
That's horrendous, and that's because a guy missed a 6-yard field goal. I mean, that's horrendous, right?
Yeah. By the way, your field goal kicker is money.
He's terrific, huh?
He is money.
Did he bank one in yesterday?
Yeah, he did. But I guess that did you see the reports too? I guess he was a name too that people were trying to pick up at the deadline.
Oh, really?
Was Gano? Yeah.
I'll blame him. I mean, he's perfect on the season.
Yeah, he's good. Really good.
Really good.
It's funny. It reminds me of the conversations we used to have about the Jets a couple years ago where we'd go like, okay, name one player from the Jets that any other team in the NFL would want. And it was only Jason Myers was the kicker.
Right.
That was it.
That was it.
That's funny. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests on DCR, PRV, the Shell, Penzo Performance Line. Now, Tom Brady, and we'll get into this game a little bit later, had a total QBR of 3.8 last night, his worst in any game since QBR was first tracked back in 2006. Stats incredible, brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. 800-919-3776. Let's get to some of these Giants calls. Let's go to Cullum in the Bronx. Lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, David. Good morning, Christopher. Good morning, Ricardo. How you guys doing?
What's up, Cullum? How are you, man?
I'm good. Well, I wanted to get into it with the Giants. I love Matt Parrott. You guys already talked about him. I don't care where they play him, left tackle, right tackle. He's phenomenal every time he gets on the field. The best drive we had was that Evan Engram touchdown at the end. He played right tackle the whole drive, and they were throwing it to the right side the whole time, and he was locking up Kerrigan or whoever was running at him. But the thing is, we all agree that Daniel Jones, it looked like he made a concerted effort not to turn the ball over, which I thought was phenomenal. If he did that, last week, we would have easily beaten the Tampa Bay without those two turnovers, in my opinion, in that second half. All Daniel Jones now, what I need to see, is after that Julius Peppers interception, we literally only needed two first downs and the games would have been over. If we got one first down, we would have ran the clock down to 30 or 40 seconds, and then I don't think Alex Smith would have gone the full length of the field in 40 seconds with no timeouts. But we couldn't get a first down. Luckily, the defense ended up getting another interception with Logan Ryan. But that's the difference. He seems like he's making a concerted effort for the turnovers, but we need to just be able to close out a game. One first down, two first downs, the game's over. He needs to learn to do that. That's the most important thing now.
But, Cullum, I'm just glad he didn't fumble that ball right at the two-minute warning Cameron Curl hit him.
Complete
blindside.
That was so scary.
Complete blindside. I mean, if he fumbles that ball, you could be talking about a different outcome for the Giants. So the fact that he held on to it and he gave his team a chance to kick the ball away to end every drive and a kick, I mean, that's really what you're looking for, especially with the way that this defense is playing. So I get what you're saying. There's truth to your quarterback being able to sustain drives, have a four-minute offense to be able to close out the game. But sometimes just making sure that your team can punt the ball away is the win. I'd rather have Daniel Jones do that than trying to do too much and make a costly turnover.
True, that's his priority. He needs to do that first, turnovers first, before he'd be able to learn how to put the team on his back and save it.
Before you can win the game, you got to avoid losing the game.
Yeah, but it looked like he made a concerted effort, and it seems like he's trying to turn the corner.
Cullum, I mean, he's gonna turn the football over. I mean, he's gonna throw interceptions. I mean, I would just say that the ones you want to avoid is kind of what you saw last week against Tampa.
Yep.
It's just like the mind-numbing decisions that make no sense. Alex Smith knows better, too. That Alex Smith interception where he's falling, like he's jumping up in the air as he's falling away and he tries to throw the ball and it goes high to McKissick office. That's a terrible decision.
Terrible decision.
Like, you can't make that throw.
Nope. And the last interception that he threw to Logan Ryan was a terrible decision. When does anything good happen when the quarterback throws the ball late over the middle of the field? Tell me, Rico.
Usually never.
Okay. All right.
That was nice for Logan Ryan, though. I mean, that was
nice. He's got the perfect way to end that guy, huh?
Well, he forced both of those last turnovers, right? Because he got the last pick, but the one where Jabril Peppers came down with it, the overthrow to McKissick, that was Logan Ryan bringing the pressure off the edge that Alex Smith was trying to avoid. So I thought he played big in that game.
I got to be honest with you guys. Like, I'm a little bit jealous with what you guys put together for a coaching staff right now.
I think you should be.
It's a solid staff.
It's the best thing we have going. Really. I think you should be. I really like what this coaching staff is. I don't like Joe Judge. I love Joe Judge. I don't think there's anything I don't like about him. The way he handled Golden Tate, the way the team responds for him. Listen, wins and losses, they're just not that talented of a football team. But Rick, what is there not to like? He's done a terrific job in a very difficult situation.
Well, a very difficult situation. And I think my only concern was, if you're going to coach the way that Joe Judge coaches, you're going to need to see some results just so guys buy in. And the wins haven't been there, but, I mean, the way this team competes, even some of the stuff you hear after the games, you know, when Jabril Peppers asked about, you know, how the Golden Tate situation was handled and how he answered that question, we handled that in-house. Like, it's coming from a Jets fan, I mean, it's refreshing to see how this team has responded to him.
And Rick, not only that, the guy that stepped in for Golden Tate, Austin Mack, had
a
hell
game.
Of a day. I mean, he came, you know, within a yard of being able to have a touchdown, and then he had that 150-yard catch as well. Like he made some big plays in that game. Alfred Morris, who just showed up a couple of weeks ago, goes out there and gives you 50 yards rushing in the first half of the game. Like, those kind of contributions, that speaks to the coaching staff and their ability to get these guys prepared to play a football game. Like, that's impressive. So to your point, I think it says something about seeing this team competitive, every game being a fourth quarter game. It speaks to the job that the coaching staff is doing during the course of the week and getting everybody ready to go play.
And it's a shame you're sitting here 2-7. It really is. Because you should have beaten Tampa. You should have beaten Philadelphia. You certainly could have beaten Dallas. The Bears game was right there for the taking. Like, it's a shame, because if you were 3-6, or even, I mean, God forbid, 4-5 right now, you'd love where this team was sitting. But 2-7 is still pretty daunting to think of winning this division.
Yeah, Dave, I'm with you on that one. There were only, what, two, three games where I feel like the Giants really didn't have a chance of winning. Like, I know the Pittsburgh game was a fourth quarter game, but I really didn't feel like they had a chance of winning
that game,
No. I mean, the Rams game, fourth quarter game, but I didn't think they had a chance of really winning that one. Same for San Francisco. But the other games that they played, all of the other games that they played, the other six games they played, I felt like the Giants were absolutely in every single one of them, and it was a flip of the coin which way it could have went.
Yeah. I mean, it's not unforeseen to think that this team, and they're not, and I'm not saying that they are, but it wouldn't be a shock if they were 5-4 right now. And that's pretty amazing with the roster that this team has right now.
Yeah, and then no Saquon Barkley being able to put together that type of season. I mean, that would be, yeah. But that's not where they're at, Dave. They're a 2-7 team, and we're
right.
We're just going to take it one game at a time, one week at a time, and see what they show us. But I think the most important thing is seeing what Daniel Jones does and making sure that he continues to move, you know, toward the right direction of not turning the football over, making good decisions with the ball, and not trying to do too much. I think that's the biggest thing for the Giants down the stretch. Daniel Jones playing within himself. If he can do that, this Giants team is going to like where they're at the end of the season.
To your point, Rick, and that is, I don't know that they're going to win. I don't think the division is really on the table. But do I expect them to come out and play a tough, good, physical brand of football on Sunday? Yes. And it's baby steps. And could I say that last year or the year before or the year before? Probably not. So I like the situation. I like the direction that they're heading in right now.
Now, how could you not? I mean, you really, outside of the quarterback, who, I mean, give him credit, he didn't turn the football over yesterday, but it's only his second game ever not having a turnover. So, I mean, like you said, baby steps, but, I mean, I think you get an opportunity to see. You say they're not that talented. I mean, I would make the argument that when you look on both sides of the ball, I mean, it's littered with, you know, high draft picks, and because they're getting the coaching that they need, you're seeing the best version of them right now. Which I think is a huge step moving forward.
Yeah,
I mean, those are the two biggest question marks, right?
About as good as they can be. Which, what more can you ask from a coaching staff? He holds guys accountable, they play hard, and they're about as good as they can be. That's what you're looking for, right?
Yeah, I mean, just think about how disappointed Jets fans were with Leonard Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And now what Leonard Williams looks like.
To watch Leonard Williams lead the Giants team in sacks.
He's a good player.
He's barreling through double teams like he's a beast right now. You never saw that with the Jets.
Never.
So, I mean, going into the season, you had two question marks, in my opinion. Was going to be, is Joe Judge the right head coach?
And we have the answer already.
And then, is Daniel Jones your franchise quarterback moving forward?
And we don't know.
No, we don't know yet, and we'll find out. But this Eagles game is a huge test for him. Because the Eagles are beatable.
The Eagles stink.
They are beatable. I don't go into that game thinking that that's not a winnable game for the Giants. Especially if the defensive backs continue to take it upon themselves to knock out NFC East quarterbacks. Because it feels like that's what they're trying to do. But, yeah, I mean, the Giants could absolutely win this game at home against the Eagles this coming week. Going into a bye week, too, it's easy for a head coach to dangle out that carrot. I'll give you more time off if you win this game.
And then it's Cincinnati.
We expect this Giants team to pretty much be in most of the games that they play because that's what they've shown us. That's who they are. Like, I think 9 games into the season, we know who they are. And outside of games like Seattle and Baltimore, I expect this Giants team to be competitive in every single game down the stretch.
But I actually feel like you can, like, the sign of a good coaching staff is during the course of a season, you feel like you can actually see guys getting better. And right now, watching this team, I feel like you can see this team week to week getting better.
Yes, they are. The defense is getting better, and they turn you over, right? I mean, the offensive line is clearly getting better. Evan Engram has gotten better because he was awful, and he's gotten better as the season has gone on. Sterling Shepard is healthier and better. Yes, I think it's fair to say this team is getting better. Special teams-wise, they're very good. They're getting better.
I would agree with everything that you just said except for Evan Engram.
Well, he had a good game yesterday.
Yeah, Dave, a good game could have been a bad game if Kevin Pierre-Lewis didn't have feet for hands.
Yeah, the hands department was not Washington football team.
I mean, think about what that game looks like if he's able to make that interception. Talking about a different game. And that wasn't on Daniel Jones. That would have been on Evan Engram.
He does that all the time.
And Rick pointed out early, he had another big drop on a third down. Like, you just can't do that. You have to be reliable. Like, that was one of the things that I thought was interesting about what Daniel Jones said about Austin Mack. He said, the one thing I know is I can rely on Austin Mack to be where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there. He's a reliable guy. Evan Engram is too much variance in what you're going to get from him from week to week. If he makes the catch at the end of that Philadelphia game, you're talking about the Giants winning that one. So, you know, he's one of those guys that's an enigma. The Giants wanted to keep him past the trade deadline, so he's with you for the rest of the season. But I don't know that he's a guy that you think is a part of the long-term future for this team.
You know, I didn't, and I'm not sure I love the fact, but I think he might be. I think they like him. Otherwise, they got a lot of offers last week. I think they would have dealt them, no?
Well, I mean, you say they got a lot of offers. He's a first-round draft pick. What kind of offers did they get for him? A mid-round pick? I mean, if he leaves in free agency, you're going to get that a compensatory pick anyway.
Sure. But yeah. I think he's going to be here next season.
I think part of the mindset could be this, though, too. I mean, with if your coaching staff has confidence, and it appears, I mean, on both sides of the ball that between – you know, both coordinators, they have plenty of confidence. Just how they call, I mean, how they call games has been great. But maybe they're thinking, like, you know, the more Evan Engram's with us, maybe we can help him reach that potential. Like, maybe they don't feel like he was coached well. Or they can coach him up to be more consistent.
Because the potential is there. No, I don't think anybody would deny
that. Athleticism is crazy.
Oh,
I mean, he's
He's elite. 240 pounds and runs 4.4. Like, nobody's going to argue about the physical skill set. It's just a matter of the focus.
Right, and he drops the ball a lot, and he's not a good player. Now, the Michael Kay Show's 20 and 20 contest begins today, 3 o'clock. The Michael Kay Show has talked to the biggest stars, celebrities in the game, in the sports genre, and all you have to do is recognize their voice. They're going to play an audio clip, which is so easy it'll blow your mind. You're going to call it the correct answer of who that was, and then you're going to win fabulous prizes today. I think your favorite, guys. Make sure you're listening for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little more enjoyable. How does this sound, Chris? The guys are giving away $1,000 cash today.
Ooh, that sounds real good to me, Dave.
Sounds real good to everybody.
Real good to me.
I would imagine.
Who couldn't use an extra $1,000 cash?
Prizes on the K-Show's 20 and 20 contest. Brought to you by PC Richard & Son, Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian Premium Cocktails on Demand, and 98.7 ESPN. That is beautiful. Cash, whew, holiday time, doesn't get better than that. All right,
I mean,
Giants, a win. You know, it was a win. We'll leave it at that, but it's a win.
Just keep your mouth shut. Take it, love it, enjoy it.
That's what I'm doing. Don't come around too often here in New York football. We'll take it, and we'll move forward. We'll talk
would you like us to Would you like us to get Peter Rosenberg on later in the show so you can troll him?
No.
It's a big day for you. I mean, the Eagles didn't play. The Cowboys lose, and you beat the Washington football team. That's a big day for you in the NFC East.
Is it, but 2-7, Rick.
Who cares? Stop it. Little victories. Come on,
listen,
man.
Listen, I'm happy they won the game. I'm not going to be dancing around sitting here at 2-7.
Canty, correct me if I'm wrong. This is the same human being that when he's on his you know, Dave Rothenberg diet, he feels the need to celebrate when he's down like 2 ounces, but yes, he doesn't want to celebrate an NFL win for his football team.
Yeah, if he's down 1 pound, he's going to let us know about it. Absolutely.
Okay, you don't understand. I feel when I'm down the pound, I'm starving to death. I'm dizzy. I don't feel well.
But aren't you starving to death for a Giants win? Hold on. Weren't you starving to death for a Giants win before yesterday?
They
won one game the entire year.
Listen,
I mean,
this is the dregs.
They're awful, Dave.
This is the dregs of the NFL I'm beating.
Yeah, the Washington football team is awful, but you still got to go out there and win the game.
I'm not throwing it back. I'm not saying I'm not pleased it happened, but he's trying to, you know, promote me. So I know what you're trying to do, by the way.
Well, just be happy that they didn't lose to Washington.
I'm happy
if you don't want to celebrate the win, that's fine. Just be happy they didn't lose.
I think that's a better way of looking at it.
Conversation would be if they went down there and lost.
Especially leading 20-3 if you would have lost that football game.
Exactly.
If you would have lost that football game.
You're trying to get me all optimistic and all pumped up so that when it comes crashing down next Monday, you're like, oh, Dave, that was a very painful loss. I'm not playing into your
game. Not trying to do that at all. That wasn't my motivation at all. I mean, just think about the conversation we'd be having right now. If Cameron Curl, when he hits him from the blind side, causes Daniel Jones to fumble that football and
scoop
they end
and up score.
Winning.
Scoop and score for a touchdown, yeah.
You'd be a mess. I expected you this morning, if we were in studio, just eating dubs like Jameis Winston. You'd be that
you did again last night.
He did.
Can I tell you, by the way, what one play bothered me the most this weekend. It drove I was so upset by this play.
Is it a Giants game? A Giants play?
Nope.
I was going to say the Bucks Giants.
Saints?
The Giants flea flicker.
Take a couple of guesses of what game it is, and then we can try to.
It was the Arizona game because you had Arizona.
Nope.
No, it wasn't Arizona.
Nope. It was, and I'll tell you, and let me give you a little hint here. The call was so bad. The officiating was it was so bad on this play, and I was actually rooting for this team to win, and it still upset me.
The Ravens Colts game.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, the interception.
The interception by Marcus Peters.
I am in shock that they called that. That is such a horrendous call.
You see what he's doing, right, Rico? He's a real bad guy because both took the Ravens in that game, and he was rooting against us.
No, I was rooting for the Ravens. I was.
Rooting for the Ravens in that game?
You didn't watch that play, and you didn't become sick to your stomach that they called that an interception.
I knew when John Harbaugh challenged it, they had a pretty good chance of winning it.
It was a
he wouldn't challenge
call.
It otherwise. He would not challenge it otherwise.
It was such a disgusting call.
What made it worse?
I think the decision by Phillip Rivers was more disgusting, but hey, maybe that's just me. Throw the ball up in double coverage?
Well, you know why he's upset. You know exactly why he's upset, because of what happened in the Chargers game.
I'm upset by that.
Oh, that was brutal.
I've ever seen a team lose more painful, innovative ways than the Chargers.
They had two shots at it, Dave. One with Mike Williams and then one with the other kid. And you thought he came down with it because it was originally ruled a touchdown,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
and then he celebrated like it was a touchdown too.
But that's what you're supposed to do, Rico. You're supposed to celebrate. You're supposed to try to leave no doubt. Leave no doubt.
Can I also ask a stupid question?
Oh, I love
you know how much I love
questions.
The stupid questions.
It's my favorite level of question.
If you're seeing now, again, these coaches make a ton of money, but still, I mean, $100,000 is $100,000. Why can we just not all wear the shield? Looks stupid. But can we just not all wear the shield so you don't get fined $100,000 because you can't wear your mask?
They can't do it.
That makes the most sense. Just wear the shield.
If you're going to be allowed to wear the shield, just wear the shield. It's so much easier. You can see your face. You can see your mouth. You can actually have the headset inside of it, so you can talk into the headset. It seems too easy to me. Why would you risk it?
Yeah, I think Anthony Lynn's got the best setup because he's got it attached to his glasses, right?
Yeah, him, then Arians has like the extra set, like it's attached to
Arians has it on his top of his head. Yeah, on top
a frame.
Of his
frame. Yeah, like an extra frame he has.
And Matt Rhule has the same setup, I think, too.
I wouldn't even risk it.
That makes the most sense.
Yeah, I mean, you pull your mask down and everything else, which is funny, too, because the coaches pull their mask down so you can understand them, but they get fined $100,000, but it's okay for the referee when he has to make a call, announce a call, he can take his mask off. That makes perfect sense. But
the rules are
you know what didn't
make
sense
really
to
make
me,
sense.
Rico, and I know we're getting far into the weeds here. But Trevor Lawrence on the sideline of that Clemson-Notre Dame game, and he's talking to his teammates, and he's pulling his mask off to talk to his teammates. And this guy tested positive for COVID days ago.
Days ago.
How does that make sense?
How about the victory celebration? I mean, you talk about embarrassing.
Well, you know what was embarrassing? My favorite guy. Did you see what my favorite college football coach did after they won? Goes up into the stands?
Dan Mullen.
That guy is the worst.
He really is.
I cannot stand that guy. He is the worst.
The worst.
Ugh.
Georgia's quarterback is awful, by the way.
Terrible.
Terrible. Florida quarterback is good, though. He's a player.
Yeah, Kyle Trask? Yeah,
he plays. Very good. All right, look, guys, we all accidentally damage our phones. It happens. Now, Straight Talk Wireless's new Platinum Unlimited plan includes phone protection, just $65 a month for unlimited talk, text, data, and more. See Mobile Protect terms and conditions at asurion.com/straighttalk. Limitations and exclusions apply. All right, Giants calls. Let's go. Dan in Saratoga. Danny, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Going on.
Go ahead, Dan.
He's trying, Dave. He's trying.
Well, you're not doing a very good job. You there?
I think we lost him. We got this new system. You know, you were dealing with this on Saturday.
It's a treat. It's a treat. Well, we moved studios.
You're such a bad guy, too. You open your show, too. You're like, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that likes to celebrate someone losing their job, but Brody Van Wagenen got fired. This is the best day ever.
I can't help it. I mean, I want to be respectful to Brody Van Wagenen. I'm not happy he lost his job, but I mean, from the Mets standpoint,
that's exactly what you are. You are happy he lost his job.
But I don't want to be that guy. I want to at least have a modicum of respect towards the guy who lost his job.
But you are that guy. Just embrace it.
All right, Dan is back, and he's better than ever. Dan in Saratoga. You're on 98.7.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Good. What's going on, Dan?
Hey. So, I really don't want to say this, but I find myself almost defending Dave Gettleman here now. I didn't think I would before the season starts, but like you guys were like talking about earlier, like the signings he made this year and him getting Joe Judge, I just feel like the culture is changing in the Giants locker room. Like, I'm not there, but obviously, but I just feel like the overall sentiment of the Giants is trending upwards. And can you make an argument for keeping Gettleman on past this season?
No.
Even no. With, I mean, no, Joe Judge is his guy, and I like him a lot.
No, Joe Judge. No. Joe Judge sold all of them. Don't get swept away. Don't let Rick tell you that all these great moves he's made. No. Dave Gettleman should not return next season. Make it an amicable breakup. You know what? He's 70 years old. He's had health issues. He wants to retire.
Oh, now you're an ageist.
Cannot bring him back again. No.
Yeah.
Well, 70 years old. Stop it. Pete Carroll just signed an extension.
But another thing I'm worried about too, like, say, like our offensive defense playing really well. Like, what are the chances of us, like Jason Garrett signing as another head coaching job, and then Daniel Jones learning a whole new system, or our defensive coordinator being signed somewhere else? You know, like maybe taking a head coaching job somewhere. That's what I get worried about.
Yeah, I don't know how high they're going to be on the list, though. I mean, there's going to be a lot
that could happen, but I don't see that. I mean, Jason Garrett is a realistic conversation, but. I mean, even when you start to peel back the layers and look at the metrics of this offense, I don't think that Jason Garrett's going to be at the front of the line, like Rico said. But, I mean, even if your coaching staff does get poached a little bit, I mean, you have a really solid staff. I mean, you got Patrick Graham, who's doing a hell of a job as your defensive coordinator. Freddie Kitchens is your tight ends coach. He's got prior experience. Your offensive line coach, he's doing a hell of a job with that group in terms of getting those young guys up to speed and ready to play. So, I mean, you've got good coaches on this staff. It's not just the coordinators.
Yes, you do, and they've coached well. But do you think that there's a real desperation to hire Jason Garrett as head coach right now? Like the
no,
Giants
but I mean, the most important thing is you got the head coach right. That's the most important piece.
Yes, and he's not going anywhere. No, he's
going
to be here for an extended period of time. DCR brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union, proud to serve members of the Armed Forces, DOD veterans, and their families. Our members of the mission, learn more at NavyFederal.org. You're very laughy today. You're happy we have the extra hour, aren't you?
I'm happy we got the extra hour. I'm laughing because I'm a little anxious still. Like, you know, outside of watching Alex Smith. Because you know, I had some mummy daddy time last night, and I may have gotten a little bit overzealous. So, see how that turns out.
Chris, this is one of those just move past it times?
No, it's
yeah,
reality.
Just keep going, Dave.
Like,
just
this could
keep
be the
on
day.
Going.
Like, 10 months from now, there could be number four rolling around. Who knows?
Or there could be Nick in Eatontown. Nick, welcome aboard. You're on 98.7 ESPN. Hello?
Just a little question for the Jets side of things. When do we start to blame the Johnsons' ownership? I haven't really heard of anything.
Yeah, but why are you going to do that? That's just a waste of your time. They're not going to – I mean, it was like blaming the Wilpons. They're not going to – the Johnsons aren't selling this team.
Johnson & Johnson, they got a lot of lawsuits. I don't know if you're paying attention to that side of it, but they got over close to 30,000 lawsuits from their employees. So, I mean, running an organization like that and then going to the Jets – It makes sense that they're the owners.
Well, it hasn't been good. I mean, they made some bad decisions. In none bigger than, none worse than having, you know, Woody leave and then putting his brother in charge during, in my opinion, one of the most important off seasons they've had.
And then his brother hiring Adam Gase days after he was fired by the Dolphins. I still don't understand that one. Nobody can make that decision make sense to me.
It'll never, ever, ever make sense. Today is a Monday, so that would be baseball, Rick. Is that right?
I believe Monday is a baseball edition.
I think so as well. Monday Night Football preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And real quickly, we find out, I guess after we were off the air on Friday, Sam Darnold, in fact, will not play in this game. The great Joe Flacco, Super Bowl champion, will get the start for your Jets tonight.
You know where the Jets are at? I'm sitting here watching Get Up, and they're showing the tease for Monday Night Football. You know how usually when you see the tease for what's going to happen, it has like the best player on each team?
Mm-hmm.
Try to guess who the Jets player was. It's Cam Newton for the Patriots. Try to guess who the Jets player was.
So they like do that little package around the player, right?
Yeah, it's their faces. It's like and Greeny's talking under it, like Monday Night Football, Patriots, Jets, and then it's Cam Newton, and then it's a picture of a Jet.
Yeah, it's not going to be Marcus Mance because he's a legitimate player. Is it going to be a special teams player?
No, it's Jamison Crowder.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's as good as you got right now.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's a little bit. I love Jamison Crowder, but that's a tad sad.
Yeah. I mean, do you think anybody's watching that commercial thinking to themselves, okay, I get to watch Jamison Crowder.
No.
Chop it up for 60 minutes.
I would bet no one knows. I would bet that not one person that's not a Jet fan, maybe a lot of Jets fans, would have no idea, because you can't see his number. You can see like the one, like a piece of the number, but you can't see the number, would even know that that's Jamison Crowder.
Listen, this is where you are. Hopefully you have this a good offseason, and you're where we are next year.
We got Joe Flacco playing tonight.
Yep, that's brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Progressive is proud to honor our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com. Let's bring them in. We progress to Andy from Merrick. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Good morning, DCR.
Oh, you're lively today, Andy.
Oh, baby, a Giants win, a Cowboy loss. What could be better? So
he's got you well trained, Andy.
Oh, he does. Well, listen, there's certain rules that you have to live by when you're in the basement.
This is the mantra to live in the basement.
So, today's questions are baseball, and I'm going to ask you to answer them in the form of a question tribute to the late Alex Trebek.
I like that.
I am spending the week in Dallas, boys, so we have four questions about your Texas Rangers.
Well, goodness.
Starting with, the Rangers played in Texas starting in 1972. Where were they for the first 11 years of their existence?
Weren't they Washington?
Yeah, I think so, Dave.
The Senators?
I think Washington, yeah.
I would like you to say, what are the Washington Senators?
Who are the Washington Senators?
Thank you, boys. Yes.
Yeah, Dave, you're correct. You said who, not what. Come on, Andy. You're better than that.
No, I'm really not. Not counting Jackie Robinson's 42, they've had five retired numbers. I'm going to ask you to name just three of them.
It's got to be Nolan Ryan.
Yes.
Pudge.
Pudge.
Pudge is two.
Who is Pudge Rodriguez?
Who is Michael Young?
That's three.
Who is Adrian Beltre?
Yep.
Four.
And I believe Johnny Oltz is also retired. Him is number 26.
You are smarter than all get out, is like we like to say down here in Dallas. Oh, my. All right. Who holds the Rangers' career record for home runs in a career?
Oh, my goodness.
Is it Juan Gonzalez?
Who is Juan Gonzalez? He's correct.
I'd be terrible on Jeopardy, but yes, correct.
And finally, boys, who is the organization's all-time saves leader?
Ooh, that's a good question. All-time saves leader.
A little New York flavor, perhaps?
Ooh. Mm. John Wetland? Who is John Wetland?
Who is John Wetland?
There we go.
Nicely done. Fellas, as always, let's be careful out there and stay healthy, boys.
Every time we talk to this guy, Rick, by the end of the conversation, I was like, ugh, it's so difficult being a Mets fan. I think those days might be done. Let's bring him in, Buster Olney. Good morning, Buster. How are you?
What's up, guys? Yeah, it does feel like a new dawn is breaking over that franchise. You know, there's a new sheriff in town. It's going to be fun.
So is there a reason? Because, I mean, Mets fans are so excited, and the optimism is through the roof. Is that appropriate? Like, we're a big market team. We have money. They're going to make moves. They're going to sign high-priced free agents. Like, we're all in now, right? Like, it's a completely different look for the Mets moving forward.
Yeah, yes. And taking the personality out of it, I think in some respects it's like when Steinbrenner bought the Yankees and decided that he wanted to get marquee names. And he elevated, you know, that franchise, you know, to a place where it had been back in the, you know, 1950s and 60s. And I think that's the direction of where the Mets are going, you know, unless he does a complete 180. Which, and we have seen new owners do that, where they come in, they're excited, they spend some money, and then they blanch and they back off. Unless he does that, I think that the Mets' future is very different. And I don't expect him to do that because, of course, he's now the richest owner in Major League Baseball. And, yeah, between front office and player development and Major League roster, I think there are a lot of improvements to be made and that are going to be made by the Mets at a time when a lot of teams are ratcheting down and ratcheting back because of their concerns about the financial landscape.
Buster, and that's what I wanted to ask you. I mean, it's you ask any Mets fan, the fact that the team sold is great, and we're all excited. But you can almost make the argument that it couldn't have sold at a better time for where, like you mentioned, baseball is, with so many people being let out, you know, let go in front offices with, you know, teams looking to move guys like Francisco Lindor, with free agency, teams looking to pull back. This is a perfect opportunity for Steve Cohen.
It's unbelievable how perfect the opportunity is. And I've been making this comparison, and forgive me if I made it to you guys before, but it's like a real estate market collapsing and somebody has a bunch of money available and they swoop in and they just start buying a property. That's where the Mets are. As you say, there have been so many really talented people let go who work in scouting, who work in player development, minor league coaches, people on the money side of the sport. And this winter, because teams are making these choices about, option years, you know, all of a sudden you have guys like Charlie Morton and Colton Wong, really good major league players who are going to be available. And if you have some cash this winter, I mean, not only, you know, we're going to talk about whether or not the Mets are going to pursue a guy like Lindor or George Springer, but we're going to be talking about, you know, filling out depth on the roster all the way across. It's why I don't know exactly what they're going to do this winter, but I do know this, is that the fan base that's going to be the most juice going into 2021 is going to be the Mets fan base.
So, Buster, Rick just brought up the timing of everything, and I know we're going to get into the names of the candidates that are going to be floated out there for the general manager or the managerial position, but I wanted to ask you, do you have an idea of the timeline that Sandy Alderson has in terms of making those decisions official? Because we're about to be in the middle of a hot stove.
Well, and I'd say this, Chris. The one thing is that I think that this winter the baseball business is going to be slowed down dramatically.
Okay.
So, in other words, normally in most years we'd be saying, oh, boy, it's mid-November. You got to get moving because guys are going to be signing. I think it's going to be unbelievably slow because the teams are waiting to see if more news develops like we got this morning about a possible vaccine. They're waiting to see, to set their budgets and payrolls for 2021 until they have a better idea of whether or not they're going to be fans in the stands. I think a lot of agents are going to be slowing things down because they don't feel good about their chances for their prospect or for their clients getting deals under the current circumstances. But that all said, I think Sandy has, started to make phone calls, started to reach out, text messages. And he's starting to make contact with people that they're going to fill out with their front office. It's an unbelievable buy opportunity that they have to be able to build an absolute superstar front office because of the current circumstances.
Buster only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Buster, it was hard to not make the postseason this year, and the Mets managed to not make it. Is that done? Like, do you think immediately this is a team that competes to win this division, or is this going to be a process where give them a couple years, let's let it, settle in, or is this going to be right away?
If you're a heating company, FW Web is your one-stop source for top quality equipment and parts. One great example, Weil McLean Boilers, an American company known for reliability and energy.
Amen. You guys remember that first summer, that whopper Red Sox deal, Adrian Gonzalez and Beckett and all these guys going over to the Dodgers. I think that's what you're looking at with the Mets, that from here on out, every year, making the playoffs is going to be the lowest bar that they have. It's going to be like the Yankees. They still have to do some backfilling and some additions in their farm system, I think, to get that up to speed. But their major league roster, when you start with a Jacob deGrom and the good lineup that they have, if they're able to go out and augment their rotation this winter, add a couple of key guys, as I say, there's going to be some really quality players available for relatively cheap prices in free agency this winter. You build up your depth, you absolutely could see them winning the division next year, competing with the Braves, who, clearly at this point are the standard in the National League East.
Buster only joins us here on the show. Buster, two-part question. Where would you prioritize the need for the New York Mets? That's the first one. What would you go after first? And then the second one, because I think it's a huge question for this New York Mets team and how it's constructed, is, are you going to see a DH in the National League next year?
First, I know it's not exactly what you're aiming for, but the first person that I'd be going after right now is Chris Antonetti, who heads up baseball operations for the Cleveland Indians. He is regarded within the industry as an absolute superstar. And I do wonder if right now is the time where, with the Indians going through a transition, likely to trade Francisco Lindor, If this is a time where the Cleveland ownership might be willing, and Chris makes a lot of money, might be willing to decide, you know what, we're going to make a move. In terms of the players, to me, because of the, when you look at the roster, the clear need is with the rotation. And I am going to be really curious about where the Trevor Bauer conversations go. I think George Springer absolutely fits. You know, he's the best available outfielder. He's a local guy. I think he'd love to play in New York. He'd fit there easily. And, you know, unlike a lot of the Mets' current lineup, I think the fact that he's a right-handed hitter would really help the balance. And, yeah, I know, you know, Rob Manfred noted the other day that they don't have an agreement for the universal DH for 2021. I think everybody assumes that that's going to be part of baseball's future because the teams want to protect their most valued assets, and those are the pitchers. And so I think that they'll wind up working something out so that Dom Smith and Pete Alonso conceivably could be both part of the Mets lineup and roster next year.
Buster, what happens with Luis Rojas? Because he's one of the guys that the franchise turned to when Carlos Beltran got swept up in the sign-stealing scandal. So what ends up happening with him now that we have a change in ownership and management?
My guess is that he's going to be fine for next year because there is a lot of respect for him within the organization. Look, when we knew this was coming down, you knew Brody Van Wagenen was going to be let go. On the other hand, I don't think that's the feeling. Now, you know, Sandy, his history is that he'll come in and he'll be circumspect and he'll give people time and evaluate what he has, and he knows him from his previous time with the team. At some point, you know, could they conceivably make a change? Sure. I did wonder, you know, if the Red Sox had not brought back Alex Cora, if the Mets might have gotten involved in that conversation with Alex. But I don't know this for sure, but I suspect moving forward, at least for the immediate future, they'll stick with the manager.
Buster, only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So it seems like the crown jewel of this offseason trade-wise is probably Francisco Lindor.
No doubt.
Best guess, Buster. First of all, it sounds like he's not going to be on Cleveland to start the season. Best guess in your mind, where is he the starting shortstop?
Yeah, and I'd say this. I mean, when we talk about whether or not he's going to be traded, remember, the Indians' history, because they're a small market team and they took major losses, and, you know, there's a lot of concern in the industry about the future of the Indians financially. There is an assumption on other teams that he's going to be traded. Just as the Indians in the past traded CC Sabathia and traded Cliff Lee and traded Trevor Bauer, they're going to want to get return for him as best they can going into 2021. He's a free agent at the end of next year. I think it's going to come down to the Yankees and the Mets. Right away, we're going to have this great competition potentially between these two teams. Now, keep in mind that you know, their bidding might be shaped by the fact that next year's free agent class is the greatest collection of free agent shortstops we've ever seen. You know, Javier Baez might be a free agent, Carlos Correa, Trevor Story, Corey Seager. So that could affect how aggressive these teams are, but Lindor is absolutely perfect for both teams. He's an exceptional defender. He runs, he hits for power, he's considered to be an incredible clubhouse leader. I don't know if you guys have ever talked to him, met him. Unbelievable person. And I've had agents tell me that, you know, what we saw with Mookie Betts is probably going to become standard operating procedure. In the past, typically when guys are traded before their free agent year, they go and test the market. Now the feeling among agents is that the best leverage might be right when you're traded in the year leading up to free agency. So I think it's not only about trading for the player, but about signing him to a long-term deal. Yankees and Mets, he absolutely fits what they need moving forward.
He's got way too much flair for the Yankees. He doesn't want to be stifled by the Yankee way. Stop that, Buster. But the one thing I will say with the Yankees, though, Buster, being tied into Gerrit Cole and Giancarlo Stanton, would they be willing to spend that much money on Lindor?
Well, and that's why I wonder if when you get right down to it, you know, when push comes to shove, I mean, they certainly have the prospects to get it done. You know, they had conversations about Clevinger with the Indians. They made that big Andrew Miller trade. If Antonetti, you know, Mike Chernoff stay in the Cleveland front office and are the ones who'd make the Lindor trade, that we know the Cashman and those guys have a history. They can make trades. But because of that potential free agent class next fall, I wonder if the Mets or the Yankees at some point would blink and say, you know what, let's just wait and try to sign one of those guys. The one thing about Lindor that would fit the Yankees right in this moment is that, you know, he is projected for years to come to be an elite defender, but also he's a switch hitter.
Yep.
And they, I think, was absolutely borne out in the playoffs against the Rays. They need to get back to getting more left-handed hitting in that lineup. There was just too much. They're too much stacked on the right-handed side.
Buster, I heard you on with Carlin last week, and you said one of the decisions that surprised you and surprised a lot of people around baseball is the fact that the Mets extended the qualifying offer to Marcus Stroman. Were you able to glean any more insight as to why Sandy Alderson decided to make that move?
Yes. I was told by sources that the Mets are gambling because they know Marcus's personality. You know, Marcus is a guy who, you know, he's going to fight for himself. He's going to believe in himself. And their gamble is that, you know what, we don't think that he'll take the qualifying offer. We think that he's got enough pride where he's going to feel like, I can do better than that on the free agent market. And if he does that and he signs someplace else and the Mets get a pick, and if he accepts it, you know, you're talking about a short-term deal. I will tell you that just about every evaluator with other teams thinks that Marcus would be crazy if he turns it down. Mm. Because of the cold free agent market coming up, because of the fact that for 2021, when a lot of players are going to be taking pay cuts, a one-year deal for $18.9 million is a heck of a contract compared. I mean, think about it. The Rays turned down an option for Charlie Morton with all of his history of postseason success for 1 year and $15 million. So for Marcus to get a one-year deal for $18.9 and to buy time to go out in the free agent market next fall is not a crazy thought.
Buster, only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Buster, I could talk to you about the Mets for the next 10 days without even discussing
it's
another
fun.
Team.
It's great.
It's sensational. It's the best joy I have in my life right now as a Giants fan. But let me ask you about LeMahieu and the Yankees. At the end of the day, do you think that he re-signs a three, four-year deal with the Yanks and stays here or moves on?
Yes, I think he does re-sign. I think that's his preference. The question is going to be whether or not they're going to be in the ballpark. And I really think that they'll wind up. I mean, first off, they love the player. They value what he does. If some other team steps in and, you know, gives him a 5-6 year offer with huge dollars, then I could see the Yankees saying, you know what, we're not going there. Especially this winter when a lot of the free agent numbers are coming down. But I just don't think that's going to happen. One of the conversations I have now with front office executives every day is, which teams do you think are actually going to spend this winter as opposed to cutting their payroll? And what I hear back a lot of course, the Mets, the Toronto Blue Jays maybe, the San Francisco Giants, who in the next 2 years have a ton of contracts coming off. Besides that, they're just not going to be that many spenders. Now, if the Mets look at LeMahieu and Steve Cohen decide, hey, not only do we want DJ LeMahieu because he's a terrific player, but we can take some back page away from the Yankees, yeah, you could see them making an offer that the Yankees decide, we'll just go and dive into the pool of maybe 300 free agents that are going to develop and not make that huge investment. But I do think the Yankees in the end will wind up being within range of what LeMahieu, you know, could get, and his desire to stay with the team I think will manifest.
Yeah, but Buster, and this isn't really my question, this is just a statement. If they trade for Lindor, that means that LeMahieu is going to be somewhere else.
Yeah,
I'd imagine,
I would agree with that because, as I mentioned before about Mookie Betts, I think that we are at a stage with the state of baseball's finances where if you get a prospective free agent who gets traded this winter, I think that guy's going to sign, and Lindor right at the top of the list. I don't think he's going to reach free agency if he's traded.
All right, so I was watching the Gold Glove presentations, and they had Nolan Arenado on, and he 8 straight Gold Gloves, another Platinum Glove. And they asked him about where he'd be this upcoming season, and he was not committal to the Rockies. Is he a guy that could be on the Mets' radar?
He could be, but it's very interesting because, of course, he's a tremendous player. You know, he wins the Gold Glove every year, arguably the best defender in baseball. And on the other hand, his contract was signed under baseball's old finances. And I think if the Rockies are going to trade him, they're going to have to eat a crap load of money along the lines of what we saw. You guys remember, you know, when Alex Rodriguez signed his 10-year deal with the Texas Rangers, it was 10 years, $252 million. It was a record. When he was traded to the Yankees, the Rangers wound up eating 35 to 40% of that. It was $9 million a year that was left on it. I think the same thing would have to be in place if the Rockies are going to unload Arenado's contract, because no one's going to take that contract under the current financial situation at face value. They're going to want the Rockies to eat a lot of money, and I just don't know if Colorado's ready to do that yet. But, yeah, I mean, he would make sense if the Rockies are ready to just dump as much of the contract as they can at a loss. Then you could see the Mets involved. Maybe you'd see the Cardinals involved. A lot of teams would be. But the first thing that would have to happen is the Rockies would have to acknowledge that they're going to have to eat a crap load of money.
Mm-hmm. Buster, is starting pitching an area that Brian Cashman is going to address again this offseason? Because it doesn't sound like they want Hap back, and Tanaka and Paxton are both free agents. What are they going to do with the rotation?
Yeah, I think there are going to be enough options where they're going to be able to get some veterans, you know, on one-year deals. That's where the fact that the free agent market, I think, is going to serve the Yankees well. You know, we're all curious about whether or not the New York teams take a run at Trevor Bauer, because Trevor Bauer playing in New York would be incredibly interesting because of his omnipresence on social media and how good of a pitcher he is. You know, he would be a great Robin to Jacob DeGrom's Superman if he were on the Mets, and for the Yankees, same thing with Gerrit Cole, and we'd all be evaluating his relationship with Trevor Bauer. But I think there are going to be so many good pitchers available on shorter-term contracts. That's my guess as to where the Yankees goes. For example, I mentioned Charlie Morton. You know, he's made it clear that he is nearing the end of his career, and I suspect he's going to be getting a lot of similar offers, one-year offers for 2021. He'd be a good guy to add.
Last one for me, Buster, and Buster only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Is Cano locked in as the Mets' second baseman next year, or is there a chance they could – you know, eat a large portion of that salary and send him away in some kind of a trade?
I don't know. I think it's too early to really know. And it probably just depends on what other dominoes are going to fall in place. Maybe the group that comes in looks at him and says, look, there could be a role for him as opposed to just dumping him and giving him away, which if you're trading Robbie now, that's what would have to happen, especially with all the available DHs in the free agent market. So maybe their first thing would be that they would just evaluate him in spring training and see where they are. And that to me is going to be the biggest difference between how Brody handled his first months on the job and between what we're going to see with Sandy. I think that those guys are going to be more patient, and they're going to wait and see what they see before making any deals. And you know, Brody's not the only executive who did it the way that he did it, but it's clear those were some of his biggest mistakes, were coming in and just making deals without really having a full sense of what each of the players were worth and what they had in the organization already.
All right, Buster, last one for me. JT Realmuto, every Mets fan wants him. Doesn't sound like he's that interested in being in New York. Is he whoever offers me the most money kind of guy, or is he more, you know, where he fits best?
Yeah, and I saw that story. I don't know if that's true about JT not wanting to play in New York. To me, playing Philadelphia and New York, it's one and the same. I don't really know that there would be a big difference. I do know this. He liked being there in Philadelphia. Bryce Harper's lobbying on his behalf. The one thing about the Mets under Sandy Alderson, I don't think they're going to be a team that's just going to go out and sign a bunch of the highest-priced guys all across the board. And if you look at the areas of the free agent market that could absolutely be exploited, where you're going to find value, one of those is catcher. There are so many free agent catchers and guys who are really good. And one guy that I kind of wonder about that might be a fit for the Mets is James McCann. You know, all-star, mm-hmm. played with the White Sox last year. Mm-hmm. He brings a lot of value. And you wouldn't have to be a guy, or you wouldn't have to give him, you know, the $100 million-plus contract that I think JT is going to get. If I had to guess today, I think JC is going to wind back up in Philadelphia.
So, Buster, you're talking about catchers. You're leading me right into my next question. What's going to be the Yankees' approach with Gary Sanchez and the catcher position overall going into 21?
Yeah, and I think first and foremost they want to see if they can rediscover that excellent hitter that they saw at the outset of his career. It has absolutely confused them and befuddled them that he's become such a swing and miss guy, and that it seems like he hasn't been able to make adjustments to the plate. Because let's face it, guys, you know, one of the questions moving forward about Gary Sanchez is about whether or not there's going to be the implementation of the electronic strike zone. If that happens, it's amazing how different the baseball world is going to look at a guy like Gary Sanchez if he goes back to being a really good hitter. Now, he's kind of looked at as being a guy who's a big defensive liability, and you hope that he hits enough to overcome that. If they go to an electronic strike zone, all of those things that he doesn't do well as a catcher, other than block balls in the dirt, those things go away. Like the whole pitch framing thing, that becomes completely obsolete. And I do wonder if that's part of the reason why the Yankees are going to be patient with him and trying to rediscover the hitter that he was when he first got to the big leagues.
The great Buster Olney joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Buster, I got to be honest. Of all the times we've ever spoken to you, this was the most uplifting, positive, best conversation we've had. Buster!
I'm glad. Well, I think you can thank Steve Cohn for that, so I appreciate it, though.
No.
Rick, one more?
No, Buster, this is having you on is the best. We love having you on. Last one, quickly. Do you think any part of Brian Cashman regrets trading for Stanton?
I think if you gave truth serum, I think he'd have to tell you it didn't work out. I remember saying and thinking at the time they made the deal and talking with executives with other teams, they were like, wow, that's a great deal for the Yankees. They thought it was an absolutely perfect deal for the Yankees. It hasn't worked out. And now there's no question. If you were to try to move that contract now, it would be exactly
you
what
couldn't.
We're talking about with Arenado. You'd have to wind up eating so much of it that it probably makes it not worthwhile. If Stanton stays on the field the next couple of years and he hits better, more consistently, then yeah, you could play his way back in. But at this point, I don't know how anyone could say it's been a good deal for them.
All right, Buster, listen, we got to run. Great stuff. We'll talk to you soon when the Mets start signing these high-priced free agents. We'll certainly get you on right away.
That'll be fun.
Yeah,
all right,
sure will. Thanks. That's Buster Olney. I got to tell you, I am so excited about the prospect of Mets baseball moving forward.
How could you not be?
I mean, you have to be.
I mean, pretty much what he's explaining is that Steve Cohen, what he's going to do, he's going to pick up the phone. He's going to call Mike Chernoff over at the Indians and say, this is what we want to do. I want Francisco Lindor and I want Chris Antonetti. Let's get this thing done.
And you're going to give it to me because I get what I want.
But that's the amazing part. And the reason I asked that last question, because, I mean, Kay mentioned it and we keep hearing it and hearing it. Because, I mean, you know that they would like to move Gleyber Torres if they had the choice over to second base, where he's more comfortable.
Yes.
Yep.
If there's no Stanton on the Yankees, there's no question they end up trading for Lindor.
Yeah, because then you have flexibility.
Because he's going to get a huge extension. Huge extension.
Yeah. Well,
could you imagine that? But could you imagine that middle infield?
No.
Lindor Torres up the middle, stop.
No. That would be, and Urshela at third and LeMahieu at first.
Ooh. Forget it.
Yeah, but that's not going to be the case, you wouldn't think. You can't keep everybody.
Well, because they got no financial flexibility with him. And on top of it, I mean, what Buster just explained, if pitch framing becomes obsolete and Gary Sanchez returns
to at some point.
Okay, and then Gary Sanchez actually turns back into Gary Sanchez offensively, you got no place for him because now he can't be your DH.
No.
So you got to move on from him.
Nobody can be your DH.
No, obviously not. Next 7 years, you got your DH.
That's right. You're locked into that. We mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again. By the way, we're in no rush today. We're with you all the way up until noon. We'll take in half of Bart and Han. They're the Pirates. We're the Pirates today, taking half of their show. They'll be on from 12 to 1. The Michael Kay Show's 2020 contest continues today. 3 o'clock, the Michael Kay Show has talked to the biggest sports celebrities in the game, and all you have to do is recognize their voice. They play an audio cut of someone that's been on their show. They're very easy. You call up with the answer. Boom. Make sure you're listening for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little more enjoyable. Today, Rick, guys are giving away $1,000 cash.
You got a little choked up there for a second.
It's emotional for me.
You get a little emotional giving
it's
money.
It's emotional
away.
For me. You know what's great about you? By the way, 2020 contest brought to you by PC Richardson's on Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand at 98.7 ESPN. Any hiccup, anything that might go wrong with anybody else that could be unknown to just the normal listener, you make sure to bring attention to that immediately.
Yeah, I just want to prove to you that I'm listening to every word you say.
Okay, so that's what it is. It more than you're making fun of me, you're there acknowledging that you are paying close attention to me.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
How about Buster, too? Yeah, Marcus Stroman's got they're counting on him having so much pride himself that he turns down almost $19 million. Listen, you can keep my pride for $19 million.
Right, I'm telling you, right?
You can buy
I'm
my pride for a third of that price. Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Give me but the one it's year. A smart play for the Mets, Shoot. Though.
Oh, it is a smart play. And, I mean, it's really a no-lose proposition. If he decides he wants to try to get a long-term deal, turns it down, okay, fine. We get a draft pick compensation. And if
right.
he doesn't, then we get him for 1 year and he's on a prove-it deal.
Exactly.
And he's highly motivated.
Right. And he wants to pitch well because he's going to get paid at the end of that year, and he's good. I mean, if you slot him in as your third or fourth starter, you could do a lot worse than that.
Yeah, that's good business. You heard Buster. The reason why you should be so excited is this is not only great because the Wilpons no longer own the Mets. The timing of this sale could not be better for the Mets.
Right, because there's going to be so much availability.
So much availability.
Oh, it's thrilling. Oh. It really is. Like, I can't... And I've said this, and people say, come on, this is one of the great days in the history of the Mets. I firmly believe that.
I don't disagree with you. I don't.
I mean, this is acquiring Piazza. This is winning the World Series in 86. This is going to the World Series in 2015. This is 69. This is Seaver. This is one of those days. This is one of those moments for this organization.
Speaking of Seaver, too, another thing I like that Steve Cohen
statue
did.
Statue of Seaver?
Yeah, that no more no procrastinating. The statue will be ready for 2021. Enough of this. It's going to be ready.
This guy gets stuff done.
I love it. I mean, he is. You know what else I like too? A little sneaky nugget that I didn't realize because no one had said it at the time, which is probably why he decided. You know what? You know what? My 2.6. I'll walk away. Why he came back? Guess who's even a bigger Mets fan than him?
His wife.
His wife's father.
Yeah. Oh, he hasn't missed a game. Do you follow them on Twitter?
Goes to every game. Yeah.
Hasn't missed a game in, I think, ever, maybe.
So if your wife and your wife's father
are
huge, I mean, it's just lining up perfectly.
It's the dream. He's going to address the media tomorrow, by the way.
Tomorrow, 12:30?
Yeah, his introductory press conference.
I'm most interested to see what he does at manager.
I think they'll keep Rojas.
You think so?
I do. I mean, I don't have any reason to believe 100%, but I think he will. I think Brody did a bad job. I don't think Rojas necessarily did a terrible job.
No, I don't think he did a terrible job, but if some of the stories are true about him just like Brody sending over, you know, lineups and making decisions and everything else, I don't know how that plays in the clubhouse. You tend to lose respect for a manager like that. Like, I mean, a guy like Buck Showalter, I mean, he intrigues me. Because I think he's the kind of manager this group of players needs.
Would love that.
Nice level of accountability.
A baseball man. He's not going to you know, be prisoner to analytics every single day.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather have that. I would rather have like a working relationship between the GM and analytics department as opposed to it's a one-way street where we make the decisions and you bite the bullet if it doesn't work out.
Right. But you know what the nice thing is? This is the first time, Chris, that you haven't sat here and said, how are they going to shop at the five and dime store? What are they? What like new and creative way are they going to? How are they going to bring in a player by, you know, giving him an extra year? Like you're now the Dodgers. You're not that small market, pathetic, have to be extra creative to bring in a legitimate player team anymore.
Well, Dave, you have so many more possibilities because you have the richest owner in the sport. I think that's what it comes down to. And I like the analogy that Buster threw out there. It's kind of like having a lot of money in a bad real estate market where everything has gone south. You're going to get things at bargain basement prices, and you're going to get tremendous value. So this is the perfect time for the Mets. The timing couldn't be any better for them, not only with trying to acquire players, but also with building out their infrastructure and getting good front office people. Like, that's where it starts.
But you heard
that's the most important thing.
If you can put that part in place, that's going to set your team up for sustainable success.
That, I think, is the most – that is going to be, for me – outside of who we sign in free agency, that'll be the most important piece of this thing, is who he ends up putting in the front office and scouting department and everything else.
Huge.
Because that's been lacking. I mean, our analytics department's been a joke.
Oh, it's been terrible.
I mean, how we develop
players is a
joke. We got
the Dave Gettleman computer folk.
Yeah.
we got like three people.
Well, three analytics people. They don't want to spend the money. They don't want to spend the money on the infrastructure of the organization.
No, because they chose to spend their money on players. So when you looked at payrolls, it wasn't like, oh my god, I can't believe the Mets aren't spending any money. It looked fine, but then you realized where they weren't spending money, and that was the real problem.
Yeah, and then the players they brought in were questionable.
The article I saw in the Post about the high speed cameras throughout the ballparks that the players could use as a tool in order to improve, like the fact that the Wilpons didn't pull the trigger on something like that just tells you the state of affairs with that franchise under that ownership. Like, you were never going to get to the point where you can compete with the other big market teams around baseball.
Because you weren't a big market team. You were
a big
market team in location alone.
What club in professional sports isn't willing to spend in their video department just so the players can see what they're doing right or what they're doing wrong?
But, Chris, when you don't have the money, how can you do it?
Fair point. I just think it's ridiculous. If you own
ridiculous.
A team, the money
that's
shouldn't
why they
be a problem.
Own this team.
If you can own a professional sports team, the money shouldn't be a problem. It shouldn't.
Now, Santi, I don't know if it's possible. I know you have a million things going on. Maybe,
Kakaw,
if it's possible.
Yeah, this is big news.
This is big news. And I
Kakaw! Kakaw!
That almost blew my eardrums.
That
by
just
the
blew
way.
My eardrum right out.
The Masters starts on Thursday of this week.
Which
Sergio
is
Garcia.
Be awesome.
Sergio Garcia has just withdrawn. He tests positive for COVID-19.
Yeah, not great.
No, bad.
You can actually have College Game Day at
Masters.
Yeah, on Saturday.
Cool is that?
It's really cool. The fact that we have the Masters going on this week is unbelievable.
You'll be checked out starting on Thursday, right?
It doesn't start till
1.
It's perfect for us.
Yeah, coverage doesn't start till 1. Unless we decide we want to start stealing some. I mean, we could just start stealing people's time. We could just go straight pirate.
I have no problem with that at all.
I mean, we just start. I mean,
just
this could be
shows.
The first
VCR takeover.
Yeah, this could be the first step. We steal an hour of Barton Hunt.
An hour
just
today,
go,
2
just
hours
go
tomorrow. We start out as like, you know, petty thieves, and we're John Dillinger by the end of this thing. We're going to take your show. Give it to us. And there's nothing you can do. All right. I have an important message, Rick, and it's multiple reasons you should listen. A, it's important. I think you'd like to know. And B, if I mess up, you'll jump on me, so people will enjoy that as well.
I'm in.
Yeah. All right. We here at 98.7 ESPN are thankful for the amazing men and women of the armed forces who have served our country and the incredible sacrifices that they've made and that they continue to make. So what we want to do is recognize your loved ones this Veterans Day. Send us an email at 98.7fm@espn.com, including their name, where they're from, and the branch of military that they represent. Again, that's 98.7fm@espn.com. We'll shout out your loved one's name on the air this Veterans Day, which is this Wednesday. So to the men and women who have served and are still serving, 98.7 ESPN thanks you for continuing to defend our freedom. Boy, I was good there, huh?
Fantastic.
That was about
but
as
you
good
had to
it
be.
Gets.
That's an important read. You had to be.
Right. Like if I mess up the K-Show promo, important but not to the level of the veterans, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, that's of the utmost importance.
Yeah. Well, I did well. Look at that. Ryan and Comac. Ryan, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
All right. So, playfully, I kind of want to come at you, Dave, a little bit because I was catching up on the podcast, and I heard this fraud, RJ Bell, if that's even his real name, take a broadside shot at New York Tech Bears. And I'm a fellow alum, and I just feel like if they came at Virginia, they came at Boston University, I feel like Rick and Chris would have defended themselves a little bit more there.
I don't care. I mean, listen, what do I care? RJ could take all the shots he wants. He has a 2-6 record representing himself right now.
Yeah, I mean, the guy works at a 55% success rate and just
We don't need to destroy RJ. He's entertaining. He does a good job. He's a nice guy. He takes shots. It's part of the shtick.
Let's be honest. Your school is just a step above DeVry.
No, I'm not. No.
Wow.
No.
Disrespectful.
You know what I have? I have a beautiful thing. I have a beautiful thing called a diploma. So you can beat me up all you want, but it's completely unfounded and unfair. No. It's a legitimate, accredited university. It's a nice school.
No, Rick, I really look up to Dave in a very serious way. I'm from Long Island. Like, I really, you know, I've listened to him for a long time. I go to New York Tech, and so I look up to him. And so that's why
I'm calling. What you don't realize, and thank you, Ryan, for this call, people look up to me, and it pains you, and you don't want to believe it's true, but it's true. Ryan, please continue.
He hung up. He couldn't take it. He was so overwhelmed.
It was emotional.
He probably got a chance to speak to you.
It's a big moment for him.
You're like you're the king of the D-gens, is what you are.
I'm the one that's made it.
You're the one that's made it, believe it or not. from getting high working at Dunkin' Donuts to now all of a sudden
playing bagel soccer in Dunkin' Donuts to look at me
bagel
now.
Bagel soccer.
It was unbelievable.
The mean
Chinese poker in the back and bagel soccer in the front. And
Dave's got the World Series of Dice going on in the back of the Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, you're shooting craps in the back of Dunkin' Donuts.
I could write a tell-all book of what happened in that Dunkin' Donuts, and you would lose your minds.
No, you got a couple revelations in the studio back when we were actually in the studio. That Canty and I, our jaws hit the floor.
Yeah. Lose your mind.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.